tension had just built up to the point where I actually felt like I was made out of stone. I just took a blade, but I went straight through a vein.
I feel appalling, I feel crap, I want to look crap. If I'm not looking crap, then that's not how I feel, so let's make that change.
I didn't know what was happening for about a month. I thought I was dead. I thought it was the afterlife. I thought it was prison. There are things you can remember, but you won't say because you feel like that's very crazy.
My name is Nico and I play Newt in Hollyoaks. My character is diagnosed with schizophrenia, an extreme form of mental illness and relatively rare. But while researching the role, I was shocked to find out how many young people suffer from mental health problems. This has to mean that people you and I know are having a hard time of it but bottling it up inside. And it is the bottling it up that can lead to greater problems, like withdrawal from friends and family, inability to cope at work or school, self-harm or eating disorders. Lydia, Mimi and Jamal are good examples of this.
I think it started to occur to me that maybe if I was just to stop eating, that would be one way to withdraw completely.
That I'd just be cutting myself, and it wasn't until I think I was 17, by which time it progressed to really doing myself quite a lot of damage.
A couple of years ago, I suffered from psychosis. I was smoking cannabis heavily, and I was hospitalized for 3 months.
Psychosis is a frightening word. What does it mean? Let's hear Jamal's story.
Obviously, you have no idea that you're literally losing your mind, because your mind's not telling you that. The only thing is people around you can see the changes and the differences. You still think you're normal, and you think everything you're doing is normal. And that's the delusional stage of the illness. I was smoking cannabis heavily, and it just didn't agree with me. I was really deluded.
When they kick at your front door, how are you gonna come?
You start believing in yourself without telling anyone that you have not superpowers, but you have abilities. First, you'll start with manipulating people. First, you'll start thinking you're more intelligent than other people. So start like that, and then you'll actually believe that you can do these things yourself. People think the funniest things. If you talk to someone in the hospital, you have someone who thinks he's a messiah, someone thinks he's Superman, someone thinks he's Neo from the Matrix or something. It depends on their influences and what kind of people they are, what route the delusion will take, basically. And with me, it was religion. First, I believed I was in Islam. They call him the Mahdi, and he's basically someone who comes before the end of time to free people. And he comes before the second coming of Jesus, because Islam believes it as well. And then I started thinking I was Jesus as well. And then, like, I thought I was everything in one. And then, like, thoughts come up into your head that you may be divine, things like that. When I went to the edge, that was me having a psychotic breakdown, similar to a nervous breakdown, but instead you have psychotic symptoms. So I was sectioned, basically. And that means you're held there for a minimum of 28 days.
Jamal's story is an explosive one. It's not always like that. Sometimes a series of small things build up slowly into something much bigger. That was Lydia's experience.
It became harder and harder, I think, for me to be at school, because school became the place where pressure was applied and I had to succeed or fail. I just started to take more sick days. I was faking illness. I was having coughs and colds that didn't exist. I was getting notes from my mum persuading her that I was iller than I was. I suppose it started happening when I was doing my A-levels, when that much more pressure started to be applied. And at that point, it was a combination of feeling bad about my body to just wanting to withdraw and the pressure just being too much to bear. Instead of feeling anxious and depressed, I started to eat less. I started to insulate myself from anxiety and emotional distress by distracting myself with the number of calories I was going to consume, obsessing about this very physical, practical thing. And then it became apparent that something was wrong because I was getting thinner. And I was weighing myself once a day, but then 5 times a day, 6 times a day, 10, 12, 20 times a day. So at that point, you know, there was this direct relationship in my head between what I ate and how much I weighed. So I needed to eat less, I needed to eat differently. Anorexia had started to become some kind of project for me. A project where I wanted to look thin. And I started to want to look thinner than was natural. Just because if I'm going to be doing this thing, of reduce my body weight, that's the name of the game. Maybe there was something in there about, I feel crap, I want to look crap. If I'm not looking crap, then that's not how I feel, so let's make that change. Then I just launched myself full throttle into a career of self-destruction and reduced my weight even further. And it got to the point where I had to be sectioned.
There are all sorts of ways in which people with mental health problems take it out on their bodies. Self-harming is one of them. Why would you want to do that? Yet the number of self-harmers is on the increase. Mimi's story helps us understand that.
There were various different things that happened to me as sort of a child and then as I was growing up. Kind of some that I'd rather not talk about, but, you know, I moved house a lot as well and was bullied a lot in school. You know, I was always the fat kid, I was the Christian kid, I was the, you know, whatever they could find to pick on, they did. So, I mean, through that, my self-confidence was just through the floor. By the time I got in sort of coming up to teenage years, I just didn't have any confidence in myself at all. At the age of about 13, I started self-harming. And initially it was cutting myself. It wasn't particularly severe, but I'd just be cutting myself. And it wasn't until I think I was 17, by which time it progressed to really doing myself quite a lot of damage. I had to go to hospital quite a lot. I just remember the immense amounts of tension, the kind of fear of doing it, because it was like, I know this is, it seemed really strange. I hadn't heard of anybody else ever doing it at that point. It's like, this is wrong, this is completely wrong, but I want to do this. And then doing it and then feeling relief afterwards, although obviously it didn't last very long because it hurts a lot afterwards. But that initial relief was kind of all I could get hold of at that point. Nothing else seemed to be solid enough to grab onto. The darkest place I think I've been is probably within the last year or so, which was when I sort of cut through a vein in one go. For the first time in my life over the last year, I actually spent time in a mental institution. Try to kill it all away, but I
remember everything. Paul Farmer is Chief Executive of Mind, the UK's largest mental health charity. He listened to the stories of Jamal, Lydia and Mimi, and nothing he heard surprised him. Mental health problems, he says, are not uncommon.
One in four of us experience a mental health problem of some kind in our lives, but the experiences that the three people you've heard about are more serious and probably only affect between 1 in 50 and 1 in 100 of the population. And the place that some of them got to was even more serious and affects a very tiny number, so only about 14,000 people in the country will be detained under the Mental Health Act. Everyone is at risk of mental health problems in many ways. We don't really know who they will affect. You could be very young or very old, very rich or very poor, from any community, and poor mental health might affect you. What we do know is that if you have a previous history of mental health problems in your family, then you're more likely you're more susceptible to have a mental health problem yourself. And we also know that if you have a very traumatic incident in your life, then you're more likely to experience a mental health problem.
In part two of Postcards Back from the Edge, we'll hear what happened when Jamal, Lydia and Mimi started to fight their way back from the edge. Welcome to part two of Postcards Back from the Edge. I'm Nico, and on Hollyoaks I play Newt, who's a schizophrenic. We've heard from Jamal, Mimi and Lydia telling us what brought them to the very edge of severe mental illness. Now we'll hear how they began to claw their way back. Jamal first, who had literally lost his mind.
When I came out of hospital for about a year, I believed that I was an idiot. I came out with nothing and I had problems even reading, just concentrating on something. So that took a while for me to build up. I had problems holding a conversation with people. I'd just lose focus and just want to go do something else. I'd feel very nervous. I feel like I've caught up with the progress I would have made had I not gone into hospital. I feel better now, I feel more happy with myself now as a person than before I went to the hospital. So I see the psychotic episode that I had was a blessing for me because it made me think about things and change things. What happens is you forget how to speak with people. Because even just being away from people for 3 months, whether or not you were mentally ill or not, if you see people who come out of prison, they come out and they're very subdued and forget people skills and get really anxious about being in crowded places and things like that. So there's certain things like that, and you feel like you have to teach yourself all these things, and it's quite an interesting time. It is like reprogramming yourself. Basically, I had a lot of help from psychiatric teams, and they were called the Early Intervention Service. And I still see them every now and again. And basically, they help you with counseling. They help you sort out things. They help you organize yourself. They tell you about your progress and all sorts of things. I even had all sorts of books and like sheets and about positive thinking. As corny as it may sound, it does help.
Lydia, like most people with problems, at first refused to face up to them. Yet healing couldn't even begin until she did so.
I probably was in hospital in total for, say, 9 months, 10 months, nearly a year. And then I came out, I was discharged. And I was discharged to the day programme, which meant I lived at home, slept at home, but every day I was going into this very structured plan of activity. Because the eating disorder was just the symptom, and there was all this other stuff going on underneath. And you had to deal with the eating disorder and get it out of the way, because it was simply a distraction. That was my drug of choice. But any drug is a distraction. Any coping mechanism is a covering. And the counselling looked at why, and it took a long time to understand why. I think there were a number of turning points, really, and they built momentum as I turned into them. The first was, still while I was in hospital, I met a poet, who I still know today, and I do a lot of work with, actually. And this poet introduced me to poetry, introduced me to the idea of writing things to explore feelings and creativity being a motor for change. And writing became this structure, this path I was able to navigate this forest I found myself in. And then also, I kind of got my first little job as well. I became a fundraiser, a charity fundraiser, and I found this group of people that I could share experiences and have fun with and socialise with. And that was so different to where I'd been, which was pretty isolated and on my own. And then later those two things came together, really, because I found that through engaging more in poetry, I came into contact with lots of other artists and lots of other creative people, many of whom had actually had similar experiences or had experiences of emotional distress too, because it's not very uncommon. Just a perfect day. I look back at that person with a lot of empathy, which means to say, I feel for who she was, I feel for who I was. I almost want to protect her. If I could go back and tell her, don't put this much pressure on yourself. Don't feel you have to crack your life open. Don't feel you have to kill yourself. I wish I could, but I can't.
Mental health problems never really go away, as Mimi discovered. What you have to do is to learn how to cope with the bad times rather than collapse under them.
The first time I was in hospital, I was very, very withdrawn. I didn't really speak to any of the other people there, certainly not initially. And then the second time I was there, the front was gone. There was nothing left to have a front anymore. And I think that was the point that really changed it all, because I was pretty much silent for most of the time I was there. I couldn't speak to anyone. I cried off and on loads, smoked like a chimney, and would sit in the art room and just draw the whole time. There was a guy in the hospital while I was there who does some stuff up around Leeds, who was just awesome and just very non-threatening, and that kind of started it off being something that I felt I could do. And most recently I've started again doing some art therapy. I think at 17, 18 or whatever it was when I first did some art therapy, I wasn't ready to really engage with it, and I wasn't ready to start looking at some of the stuff that may have caused my problems that I had in terms of sort of my mental health. I wasn't ready to look that deeply into it because it was far too scary. But I think over the last year or so, having really got to, I suppose, what you might call an edge, I now know that I need to get back, and it's kind of like clawing my way back to the real world. It's an ongoing process. It's kind of the difference between sort of head knowledge and heart knowledge, and sometimes my head saying, you know, you can't do anything, you're crap. And my heart's going, no, come on, you know, you can. Get up. Get on with it. So, you know, there is a difference in the way I respond to things. I'm much more outgoing again. I'm kind of more like what I suppose myself is. I suppose the difficulty for me is that it went on for such a long time, not kind of dealt with, that I sometimes wonder who I am. And who this person that I am is, and is that what I would have been? And you know, it's all, sometimes I do find that quite hard. My diagnosis now, after many, many years of seeing various medical professionals, is a borderline personality disorder, which is, I think, the American version of the diagnosis, unstable personality type, basically. Of the two, I think I prefer the borderline.
Paul Farmer of Mind, the UK's largest mental health charity, is heartened by these stories of Jamal, Lydia and Mimi, people with severe mental health problems who've come back from the edge.
What all the stories have in common is that they're telling us that having a mental health problem isn't a life sentence. In different ways and in different paces, everybody's on their journey of recovery. And I think a lot of people think that having a mental illness means you're never going to work, you're never going to have a relationship, but that's just not true. Jamal talks about the help he's had from the early intervention team, and up and down the country now there are early intervention teams who are specifically there to help young people who experience psychosis. And this means that his prospects are probably the best ever for somebody with a psychosis. In the past, people with psychosis would have been locked away and literally out of sight and out of mind. Lydia's got control of her life. She talks about how she realises that the behaviours of her eating and her obsession about her body are things that have to be put to one side so she can really understand what's going on. And like lots of people who experience anorexia, she's found a lot of help from talking about her experiences. Mimi knows that her journey isn't over yet, and it's still relatively recently that she's been at her edge point. But Mimi also knows that she doesn't want to go back there again. And turning that corner is something that's incredibly important for people. For lots of people, that realisation that looking for and finding help is a really important moment. And she's at that point, which is really great.
Good news, as Mimi, Jamal and Lydia prove, is that there is life after madness. But as they found out, you do have to face up to the madness. No need to panic then, but it's no bad idea to do a bit of honest self-appraisal, not least because mental health problems can creep up on you in the most unawares. Monday morning blues or feeling down after a row with your best friend do not mean you have a mental health problem. Such things are part and parcel of everyday life. But if these everyday things start to take over and lead to excessive depression or worrying behaviour, don't bottle things up. Talk to somebody.
Does that make me crazy? Does that